Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, welcome to a brand new edition of Between the Links on MMAfighting.com. My name is Mike Heck. I am the host, maybe curator would be the better term, as we are back with some new topics and a fresh matchup this week, because if you listen to the debut show last week, the champion called his shot and we are making it happen on BTL. So let us introduce the combatants first. Our challenger, he is familiar with the concept because he's been a part of it before in earlier iterations. He is undefeated as well. From MMAfighting.com, Damon Martin. Damon, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Good to be back and ready to defend my crown. I don't like that challenger title. It doesn't sound right to me.
Well, I mean, this is the new iteration, so you can become the champion after this week, but you have to first defeat the reigning defending champ coming off his decision win over Alex K. Lee, the man who laid down the gauntlet. He's back from Las Vegas after covering UFC 250. Jose Youngs, how are you, sir?
Well, it wasn't a decision. Like, it was a beatdown. It was as Robbie Lawler would say, it was the culmination of a beatdown. I get you gave him the pity 10-9 somewhere in the middle, but let's be honest, it was 10-8 across the board in terms of me and AK Lee. Like, give him the middle round, like, just to save face so you don't have someone, like, just run gauntlet on someone. I've seen around the horn at ESPN, everyone, you always get that random, like, hey, you don't have a point, here's one, so you don't go out with 0 points, but just call it for what it is. And I did call out Damon, not because I am 100% confident I can beat him, but two undefeated people. You want to challenge yourself against the best. I would rather not have another easy day, so I don't want to rematch AK Lee. I would rather go up against someone who can give me a challenge, and that is Damon Martin.
Wow, what an introduction that was. The big battle right now is not Jose versus Damon, but there's a fly that snuck into Command Center 2.0.
That's actually AK Lee. You can just say for what it is.
AK, get out of here. Go back to Canada. But let's get right into this thing. Of course, the big stories in MMA have nothing to do with events or fighter versus fighter. It's fighter versus the UFC. And last week, we started off the show discussing John Jones and his battle with the UFC and Dana White. Now we've heard from Jorge Masvidal. He's putting his cards on the table with the UFC and Dana White, asking for his release if he can't get what he wants. We're going to get more into things with those two gentlemen in a moment. But on Saturday night, Conor McGregor, the biggest star in the sport, he took to Twitter after UFC 250 and announced his retirement for the third time. Immediately, guys, this was met with eye rolls by most people, but questions from others. Like, for me, I thought, is this related at all to what's going on with Jones and Masvidal? Who really knows? We got Dana's take. Conor gave his take to ESPN, but it was just so abrupt that we haven't really had a chance to really digest it all. So, Damon, let me start with you. You won the blind draw. How did you react to Conor retiring? And secondly, what is he trying to accomplish here?
Well, my initial reaction was not again, because we've been here before. It wasn't the first time. This is actually the third time Conor has retired. So that was my initial reaction. After that, I thought, well, here's more of the money problems. You know, John Jones has a money problem. Jorge Masvidal has a money problem. Henry Cejudo had a money problem. Maybe this is Conor. He came out and later said that, no, it wasn't a money thing as much as it was an issue of competition, which, I don't know, it seems kind of bizarre. I mean, it feels like there's plenty of guys who have called for Conor and wanted to fight him, but apparently not. He's not interested in anybody. Maybe Conor just felt like he was out of the conversation because everybody else was talking about John and Jorge. I don't know, but I don't believe Conor's done. I think this is, this is more negotiating tactics. Maybe it's not for more money. Maybe it is just for the opponent he really wants or an opponent he hopes to get, but I think we will definitely see Conor McGregor back, but I think he was out of the conversation, and Conor doesn't like being out of the conversation.
Jose, what do you think? Do you think it's more of Connor just wanting that shine back upon him with everything else going on, or is there something more to this?
I think it's that. It's definitely that plays a factor. I mean, I know you remember. Remember in the 2007 World Series, there were like two outs to go, and you remember when that was like Alex Rodriguez decided that was the perfect time to announce he was opting out of his contract, and like baseball fans are like, really, dude? Like, two outs in the season in the World Series, and this is what you're pulling right now. It's that UFC 250 was the and like, when did he announce it? Like right at the end of the card, like took all the shine away from the fighters and put it on himself. I'm not calling him selfish. It was a calculated move. Like, Dana White's about to be up there. The eyes are on the UFC. Conor McGregor is the most famous fighter that's ever lived. So of course he's going to take advantage of the opportunity to do public, quote, public negotiations. I'm with Damon. I don't think he's gone whatsoever. I think this is a combination of contract, lack of opponent that he wants, which is so bizarre to me because he had the opportunity to fight Justin Gaethje in January or even before that, and he chose Don Cerrone. Justin Gaethje got the interim title fight, and now he's complaining that he's not fighting Justin when he had the opportunity to do so already. It's also, I think, a little bit plays a factor. I don't know if enough people are talking about it, is if Conor fought in the summer or even in the fall, it's not going to be in front of anyone. And that's a lot of money that the UFC would be leaving on the table if there's no gate for Conor McGregor fight. Also, Conor's entrances are so important. Like, they play, it's like the mystique about him, like him walking out in the sea of fans with the fog machine, everything. The lack of fans is definitely going to play a factor. And that's why when Dana was like, well, if he wants to retire, like, go ahead, this and that. Like, part of me is like, well, thank God, because now I don't have to book him in an empty arena. Like, Conor can come back when fans are allowed. So I think it's a little bit of a combination of all of that. Like, but again, I'm with Damon. Conor's not retiring. This is the third time he's pulled this, and it's not stuck yet.
Jose, since you were in Vegas, I want to follow up because you were part of both Dana White scrums. He was on fire in both of those. But the Saturday scrum after 250, he was on like a whole nother level. Like, we've seen him fired up before, but he was just on a different level on Saturday night. And Dana was, like you talked about, he was indifferent, sort of chalked it up to, well, the world is crazy. If he doesn't want to fight, he doesn't have to. And you know how I feel about people saying they want to retire. Is he deep down, like you said, do you really feel like he's, oh, now we don't have to worry about a gate? Or is he like, I can't believe this is happening. This is crazy. This is the last thing we need right now.
Well, I don't know if the thought of this is the last thing we need right now has ever crossed Dana White's mind. Dana White has seen his, like, I'm not even going to try to comprehend what goes through that man's mind. He himself said, like, in the thing is like, there's so many issues that go into holding an event. Now multiply that by a million, and that's where we're at right now. Like, I think Dana's like, I have bigger things to worry about right now than another Conor McGregor retirement. Like, yeah, he would be, quote, losing the biggest star he's ever had. But I think Dana's with us. Like, all right, you've done this before, and you came back. So maybe it's one less thing to worry about, trying to find Conor a fight. Or maybe he can talk to – I have no idea. Again, I'm not going to try and comprehend what goes through Dana White's mind. But Dana White has also done a phenomenal job. And when I say phenomenal, like, I don't like it, but he's done this thing. We've all seen it where someone will ask a question, and then Dana will just dance around it with, like, agitatedness. Like, someone's like, Jorge Masvidal said that we're only getting 18%, and then Dana White just completely ignores it and just goes on this tangent where I was like, hey, Amanda Nunes said that she thought she had the coronavirus. And before I could even get the question out, he was like, everyone thinks they have the coronavirus. Then he goes on this tangent. So Dana White is doing a real good job of being like, you're asking an important question, and then he's shaking some keys over here that you all of a sudden you have to look at the keys and you just completely forget the question at hand. So I'm not even going to – like, I'm not surprised at Dana White's answer if that was the question.
Damon, what do you think? Is he a richer, more powerful man rolling his eyes like myself when Conor retired? Or deep down, was he freaking out a little bit?
No, I don't think Dana was freaking out at all because, again, we've been here before. Conor has said, I'm retiring before. Thanks for the cheese. See you later. And then whatever it was, 2 weeks later, he booked a fight. You know, Conor's not stupid. Conor knows exactly what he's doing. Conor does everything very calculated. I mean, anytime Conor puts something out on Twitter, it's for a purpose. And that's what this was. It was done with a purpose of doing it right at the end of an event. as Jose said, right at the tail end of the main event, you know, knowing that there's going to be a post-fight press conference and Dana's going to be talking and everyone's going to be asking him questions. This was all calculated. So I think Dana, you know, has come to realize that with Connor. And I think he's kind of come to understand how Connor works. And, you know, Connor isn't like John Jones, where John Jones is going on Twitter. And yes, John Jones at one point said, you can release me, or, you know, maybe I just won't fight again. But I don't think anyone even took that serious. Not that John couldn't do it, but he was just being angry. And John has continued to be angry these past few days. But Connor, his trigger for some reason is to say, I'm retiring. I don't know why. I don't know why that's his trigger. But he just keeps saying, I'm retiring. But after the third time, I think we've all kind of learned, you know, he's the boy who cried wolf. And I don't think anyone believes it. So I don't think Dana's sweating it. I think Dana is just coming to realize that he's got a lot of people, as he said on Saturday night, gunning for him. It doesn't look good in the public eye, that's for sure. But I think Connor retiring and then coming out later and saying it's because of the competition is probably better for Dana, because at least then he doesn't have to answer 18% of the revenue being paid to the fighters. He doesn't have to answer, you know, John Jones saying they've been ripping me off for my entire career. So I think in a weird way, he actually prefers what Connor did.
That's a great point. Now that you think of it, very close round, but the point is going to go to the champ as we move to our next topic.
We basically have the same board. Answer too, just rephrase
yeah, just different ways of looking at it. But I think Jose's key analogy, I think, put it over the top for me. But now we have to try to, like, essentially bring all these elements together somehow, because, you know, and just to give my take on it, I think we're all in agreement that Connor's going to fight again, but which mm-hmm. leads you to this question, because as of now, we have three of the biggest stars in the sport who don't seem like they're getting back in the cage anytime soon, with McGregor and Jones and Masvidal. And like both of these gentlemen talked about, McGregor says it's because there's no interesting fights. Jones and Masvidal are fighting a different fight, a fight that every sport has had to deal with at different points throughout, you know, the entirety of it. Jose, let's start with you. Of these three gentlemen, Conor McGregor, John Jones, and Jorge Masvidal, who is the most likely to be the first one back competing in the octagon, and who is the least likely, and why?
Ideally, and like, just if you don't know anything about the sport, just the way you laid it out, like two people arguing about money, one person arguing about competition, the competition one would probably be the most logical. But again, I don't think Connor's going to fight again until fans are allowed back in. So that's, I think he's the least likely, because Connor can fight whenever he wants and it's going to be the biggest story in the world. Like, Masvidal and Jones need to keep fighting in order to stay relevant. Like, yes, Jorge Masvidal has never been more relevant in the sport than he is right now. But if he doesn't fight, like if he can't take a 2-year sabbatical like Connor and then come back and still be the biggest star in the world and captivate audiences, same as John Jones. John Jones can't go away for 2 years and then come back and all of a sudden do a million pay-per-view buys. Connor can. So I think Connor and the UFC know that. So if Connor's going to, quote, retire and then fight the winner of Habib, Justin, or Tony in 2021, that would make a lot more sense. I think it's going to be Masvidal, simply because John Jones and Dana, like we said last week, it's round five between those two. This is nothing new. Like, John and Dana's relationship has soured so much that it wouldn't surprise me if John took a lot of time off to figure this out. He also seems to be much more involved in this movement, in these protests going on. We've seen him on the streets of Albuquerque, so his situation might be a little more where he might be preoccupied with bigger things in the world than fighting. Rightfully so. I think he's saved, like, not saved face, but this is like, he could do a lot of good for his image if he's on the front lines in this Black Lives Matter movement that he's so invested in. Masvidal is doing this thing where he's going on the Dan Le Batard show like every other week and trying, it's like, I'll train you when you fight Dana. And then Dana's feeding into it. Plus the welterweight division is so much more, there's so much more competition in that weight class than in the light heavyweight, that I think Dana can book other fights that could get Masvidal back in there. If he goes, well, fine, Gilbert Burns will fight, and then maybe that will lower Masvidal's asking price a little bit more. So I'm going to say Masvidal but that's based off of process by elimination rather than I think he wants to fight.
So Damon, Jose's going with, from most likely to least likely, Masvidal, Jones, McGregor. What's your list?
Well, so once again, we're going to be giving the same answer with different takes, but I agree that it's going to be Masvidal, Jones, and Connor. but for slightly different reasons. Masvidal, I agree. It comes down to opportunity. And the reality is, Masvidal just became a household name in the last year. I mean, we got to be honest about that. He's been around forever, and he's a phenomenal fighter. I said years ago, I thought he was one of the most underrated guys in the sport, but he really didn't hit stardom until he, you know, went out there and, you know, flatlined Ben Askren in 5 seconds, and then you had the Nate Diaz fight for the BMF title. He wasn't that household name. He wasn't a headliner at that point. He wasn't like a guy you put on pay-per-view and think you're going to get a lot of buys. An opportunity for him will fade away because, you know, he doesn't have that long-term name value. He doesn't have a title right now. Yes, he's a BMF champion, but as you said, Kamaru Usman goes out there and fights Gilbert Burns, then his title fight goes away. He goes out there and fights Leon Edwards. That goes away. So there's only a couple of options for Masvidal to have a really big fight right now, and it's probably going to be Usman. He could still probably get a lot of shine off of an Edwards fight because of that rivalry from the past. And Connor, but again, Connor's in this mix. He's not going to get Connor. I don't think he's going to get Connor. Or the Nate rematch, and we all know what Nate, in terms of negotiations, goes. So Masvidal's options are more limited. And Jones, I think, eventually will come around because, remember, this whole thing with Jones started because he was going to heavyweight. It wasn't because he didn't defend his light heavyweight title or because he didn't have challengers. It's because he teased a fight with Francis Ngannou. And when he went to the UFC and said, let's make it happen, and they didn't want to cater to his financial demands, that's where this whole thing exploded. So at some point, Jones, just to play out his contract, could say, I'm going to come back and I'm going to fight Dominic Reyes again, or I'm going to come back and fight Jan Blachowicz again, and not make as much money because this is the contract I agreed to. So I think eventually cooler heads will prevail there as well. And also, don't forget, Jones and Masvidal have the same manager. They're managed by First Round Management, Malky and Abe Kawa. So they have the same management team. So there's a good chance, you know, if one comes to terms, the other domino falls right behind it. Connor's issue isn't money, or at least publicly he's not saying it's money. But I think his is, as Jose said, it's the crowd. I think that's one. I think Dana holding him back for the crowd and holding him back. Dana said last week the best thing for Connor was sitting and waiting for Gaethje or Khabib. He's not even trying to cash in on Connor right now. So obviously Connor's got, you know, he can wait all the time in the world. He actually fought back in January. Masvidal, you know, the time ticking away on his relevancy goes away when he doesn't have a big matchup, he doesn't have a fight. So I agree. It's going to end up being George Masvidal, it's going to be Jones, and it's going to be Connor, but for slightly different reasons than just all financial.
Right.
All right. Well, let's add some wrinkles to this, Damon. What percentage do you give that all three guys will fight in 2020?
All three guys fighting in 2020. Man. Right now, I would say 25%, because I think Connor's the X factor. I think we will see Masvidal fight this year. I think there's a good chance we see Jones fight this year, but I don't know about Connor, because without crowds, and if Khabib and Gaethje go out there and put on no one walks into a fight with Justin Gaethje and walks out the same again. Even if Khabib wins that fight, I don't think he's going to walk out the same again. So I don't think he would fight again in November or December. So even if Connor got that title fight, I don't think it would be till January or February anyways.
Jose, you higher or lower than 25%?
I'll say 10%. But again, Connor is one. If Connor doesn't fight for the next 5 years, it wouldn't surprise me. But if all of a sudden tomorrow, Daniel's like, yeah, Connor wants to fight in a month, that also wouldn't surprise me. Connor's one of those few fighters where he can call his shots of when he wants to fight. If he goes, I want to fight the number 15 guy in the world tomorrow, like, would it make sense? No, but it wouldn't surprise me because he can call his shots. I'll say about 10%. I think being man, like Damon makes a good point with the same manager with Masvidal and Jones. And I think Masvidal will fight first, but I'll say 10%. But I say that with a lot of questions in the air. I think Connor will probably fight. Well, I remember when he called for, like, this will be my season. And then, like, that went out the window for a multitude of reasons, like a pandemic, the protests, and this interim fight that happened. So, yeah, I'll say 10%. I think Connor will fight again in the first quarter of 2021.
I do want to add one more thing to this, because one of the things I saw on social media, especially with the McGregor thing, was, you know, we're going to be seeing a lot more of this. Like, this is the beginning of the fighters unionizing and forming an association. And we've been hearing about this forever. And I still don't believe it's ever going to happen at this point. But when we're recapping maybe not. Let's take the association and the unionizing out of it completely. But when we're recapping like the biggest stories of 2020, Jose, we'll start with you. Do you think we're going to be talking about a litany of UFC rostered fighters speaking out against the UFC because some of the top guys have, or do you think it sort of ends where we're at right now with the Masvidals and the Joneses and nobody else is ready to do that?
It's never going to go away. People have been complaining about their pay for the UFC forever. I mean, even Randy Couture was like, release me from my contract. I want to go fight Fedor. And like, that wasn't even money. That was like, he wanted a super crossover fight and the UFC wouldn't do it. So it's always going to be prevalent. Everyone wants more money and the UFC is not willing to pay that much money, especially when boxing comes back and you see all these guys pulling in like $30 million for a fight. As soon as they announce fight purses, all the UFC fighters are like, oh, like, look at that. Like, they're making $30 million and I'm getting like a 16th of that. Like, it's always going to be there. And it's fighters like, do you remember when Nate was trying to hold out for more money for this, like a second or third Conor McGregor fight? And then he put Donald Cerrone on blast for accepting any fight because he goes, you're the reason we're not getting paid what we should, because you're willing to fight whenever. Like, I like Donald Cerrone as a fighter. Like, I like that attitude, but it's Nate's not wrong. Like, look at Gilbert Burns. Like, Gilbert Burns will fight anyone, anytime, anywhere. If Masvidal is trying to get this big contract situation out, and then Dana can just turn around and be like, Gilbert, you want to fight for the title? I'll give you an eighth of what Masvidal's fighting. Gilbert's like, yeah, I'll fight anyone. I'll fight anyone at middleweight to lightweight. I'll fight anyone. So like, that's a reason fighters will never unionize. And this will never stop. It's not going to end. Like, throw Henry Cejudo in there. This, like, Henry Cejudo retired because he wanted the big money too. And even Sugar Sean was like, I want to get paid what I'm worth, because he's still on that Contender Series contract. And he's grossly past that. Like, it was similar to when Roy Nelson was like, had like six fights in the UFC and he was still on his Ultimate Fighter contract that he won. So this will never ever go away as long as the UFC is not willing to pay fighters what the boxing is making.
Damon, this is pretty typical, like we talked about, but do you feel like, especially now when we're in such a chaotic world, that this might be the year that, you know, to use your analogy, that more of these dominoes start to fall here?
No, because ultimately what Jose said is absolutely right, and it's something we said privately in our group chat the other day, is that, you know, as soon as the whole Masvidal thing came out, Gilbert Burns dropped his tweet and said, I'll take the fight. I'll take it right now. That's why. There's always going to be somebody willing to take it and not necessarily care that they're not getting $2 or $3 million. The only way this really changes, and I agree also, there's not going to be a union. It's just never going to happen in MMA because, again, there's always going to be a guy willing to fight when another guy won't. The only thing this entire story, the only thing that will ever really change it is if John Jones, you know, actually walks away for good, because John Jones, in my opinion, is the greatest fighter of all time. If he really does walk away and retire, which, again, I don't believe he's going to, and Conor McGregor walks away and retires and said, I'm really done, and this actually sticks, then it's a bigger story. Then dominoes could begin falling, because you've now lost the greatest fighter of all time and the biggest, most marketable fighter of all time in one fell swoop. The reality is, though, I don't think either of them are done. I think John will come back, and I think if John gets a new deal and gets, you know, paid closer to what he thinks he's worth, then he's going to say good things, and I feel like I'm getting paid more what I'm worth, and he'll fight, and we'll move on. Conor will come back. He'll fight the winner, Habib Gaethje, or maybe they do the Diaz trilogy or something, and then that goes away. So these are all short-term problems that will go away as long as these guys all come back and fight. And Masvidal, and I'm not insulting Masvidal. Masvidal is phenomenal. Masvidal is a veteran. Masvidal deserves everything he's getting in terms of praise right now, but he doesn't have a title, and he doesn't have that kind of long-term star power to where if he walks away, the sport kind of falls apart. So unfortunately he's kind of the guy on the outside looking in. But Jones and Connor, if they both actually retire, walk away done, and they don't come back, then we're talking about more stuff. But they're not. I don't think either one of them are done, and they're gonna come back, and then all this just kind of goes away until the next unsatisfied guy raises a stink, and then that goes away.
It's like, I'll add something, like when Israel Adesanya was on the rise up, a lot of what I heard is, yeah, he's really popular now, but just wait until he gets in a fight with Dana. Like, it just seems like you get these big deal, like, uber prospects, And in the back of my mind, I'm like, just wait until, like, it started when Israel Adesanya headlined against Anderson Silva, when they were supposed to be the co-main event before Whitaker and Gastelum fell out. And he's like, where did all those pay-per-view points go? And I'm just like, oh, it's starting. He's starting to ask about his money. Like, this is where it begins. And now Sugar Sean, same thing. It's never going to go away. Like, say Conor and Jones retires, that will be a massive story. But then you have all this new wave of prospects that come up and become champions. They're just going to ask the same questions these guys are asking. So it's never going to stop.
People were saying, like, throughout all this that, you know, how dare you not mention Henry Cejudo in this? And I understand that argument for sure. But the reason I didn't really lump Cejudo into this cluster is because I didn't buy any of it. Like, I understand that he might feel like he's underpaid and he's a guy on the rise, but I'd say he's become like more of a stock that you can buy because it's a future stock buy. I wouldn't say Henry Cejudo is like a must-watch, must-buy pay-per-view seller. So that's why I really didn't like lump him into this equation. And he's already come out and said that Alex Volkanovski can get him right back into the octagon. So that was another reason too. Go ahead.
The Cejudo thing, two things about that. One, when he retired, and I talked to his coach, Captain Eric, a few days after that, and he said he thinks he's serious. And there is a part of me that believes Henry is more serious about retirement than obviously a guy like Conor is, but because Henry is a guy who he won the gold medal, youngest American at the time, and he walked away. Now, he did eventually try to come back, but you know, he pretty much said, I'm done. I'm going to walk away from wrestling and I'm done. And I believe he could be done right now. He wants to start a family. You know, he kind of, you know, did his thing. He wanted to be the greatest combat sports athlete, whatever, of all time. But as you mentioned, Mike, the problem that Henry has versus Conor versus Jorge versus Jones is that he's not that draw. And unfortunately, Henry didn't stick around long enough or didn't have the kind of marquee fights to where people are saying, man, I can't wait to see Henry Cejudo fight. And unfortunately, he doesn't have that drawing power. And when you don't have that drawing power, a lot of your leverage just goes away.
And the timing of that whole thing was crazy because right when I feel he was turning the corner, he retires. Like after the Cruz win, I feel like people were buying in a little bit more. The timing of that is just unbelievable. But with that being said, point goes to our challenger, Damon Maher. We even things up going into round three. Moving ahead to our next question, let's talk some fights. Let's talk with people who are actually fighting right now. UFC 250 is in the books. Amanda Nunes successfully defends her women's featherweight title. And I'll preface this again for those who are not paying attention to what we say. She became the first fighter in UFC history that has held two separate titles in two different weight classes at the same time to successfully defend both of those titles. So we've seen it in other ways, multiple fighters being champions in multiple divisions and having successful title defenses, but no one has done it at the same time. Amanda Nunes did, but she looked great. Bantamweight division was on fire. It was a great fight card from start to finish, in my opinion. There were a lot of great performances as well, and that's where we're going to spotlight here. Damon, we're going to start with you. A la the NHL, who are your three stars from UFC 250?
Well, I'm going to go, you know, as much as I appreciate and admire what Amanda Nunes is doing, and I don't want to feel like I'm taking away from her because her accomplishments have been amazing, but, you know, I don't think anyone, you know, outside of one person in our group picks actually thought that she was going to lose. So it's hard to, you know, just heap more praise on Amanda when you kind of expected her to go out and do what she did. So my three stars from UFC 250, I'm going to start with Aljamain Sterling. I'm going to go to Cody Garbrandt, and I'm going to go to Sugar Sean O'Malley, the three bantamweights, because they all shined great that night. Aljamain Sterling proved A, he is the best bantamweight, you know, contender in the world right now. And B, he also proved that the UFC is making a colossally bad decision by putting Jose Aldo in there against Petr Yan when you've got a guy in Aljamain Sterling who is now the clear-cut number one guy that now that Henry Cejudo's gone and Marlon Moraes is kind of to the side right now. Marlon Moraes, you could argue, is the number one guy outside of Cejudo, but he's not in this argument right now. Sterling should be in that title fight, and the UFC blew it by not putting him in there. And then Cody Garbrandt, man, talk about a guy against, you know, back against the wall, three losses in a row, three knockouts in a row. He went from the future of the bantamweight division to a guy people were saying had no chin. He was done. 28 years old, and people are saying he's done. He had to come out and have a big performance, and he had a tough opponent to do that against because Rafael Assuncao is a perennial contender, but I don't think anyone's going to argue that Rafa Assuncao is the most exciting guy in the history of the sport. And he went out there and absolutely flatlined him in the second round, one of the craziest knockouts in recent memory at bantamweight, where we typically don't see a ton of those kind of highlight reel knockouts. But we did see one earlier in the night with Sugar Sean O'Malley when he went out there and took on a very real opponent. Eddie Wineland is a tough veteran. And to sleep him the way he did with that knockout and then the walk-off was just unbelievable. So to me, it was a bantamweight showcase from start to finish. We saw a new contender emerge. We saw a former champion return. And we saw maybe the future of the division all in one night.
So are you ranking Aljo 1, Cody 2, O'Malley 3?
Yep. I'm going to go Aljo 1, Cody 2. I'm going to go O'Malley 3.
Jose, what's yours?
Well, if you're going to ask me who I thought Damon was going to pick, or not even Damon, anyone on planet Earth, it would probably be those three. So I prepared outside of those three.
I knew that's why
Damon was going to pick. I'm not going to rank these by any means because it's hard to rank why I'm picking them because no one is more important. But I'll start near the top, the higher up on the card. Ian Heinisch was on a 2-fight losing streak. We all know you lose 3 in a row in the UFC, you're probably not going to be in the UFC on your next fight. Ian Heinisch, I interviewed him at UFC 241 before he was going to fight Derek Brunson. And he was talking like, I'm going to beat Derek Brunson. And then I'm going to fight Jacare. And then I'm going to fight Kelvin Gastelum. And then I'm going to get a title shot. Obviously, didn't work out for him. He changes camps. Then the pandemic hits. And then he has to move back to Colorado. Doesn't get to go to his old gym because it's awkward. He goes out there. He was a plus 850. It was plus 850 for Ian Heinisch to get a first-round finish. And he goes out there and just tears through Gerald Meerschaert, who was coming off one of the biggest wins of his career in drawn win, has 20-plus submissions in his career, best saxophonist in MMA. So I think we're all in agreement that Gerald Meerschaert's stock had not really been higher than it really is now. And I know it's like there are levels to that like stock, but Gerald Meerschaert was at least people knew who he was. And Ian Heinisch saved his job, got someone a lot of money, and then had one of the lines of the night where he goes, quarantine is nothing for me. I'm used to being locked up because he was, of course, in a foreign jail for 2.5 years. So saved his career, great line, got someone a boatload of money. And then this is why I'm not on these right now, Cody Stamann. The mental fortitude of that man is something else. Like, goes out there, takes a fight like a week after his younger brother passes away, fights Brian Kelleher, and then as soon as the fight's over, he just, like, in a world where we're trying, like Israel Adesanya says it's the best, like, let's abolish like toxic masculinity, Cody Stamann just was not afraid to cry. Professional fighter in there crying over the passing of his brother. All of us would have been in that same boat. And Cody Stamann was like, I tried to be the tough guy, like the no BS, go on there, handle my business and leave. And he just couldn't. And Brian Kelleher gave him a hug and he just broke down. And then again, one of the lines in the night, he's like, someone asked him like, who do you want to see next? And this and that. He goes, man, I got to go home and go to a funeral right now. Like, I'm not thinking of another fight. And I'm just like, God, like, it just, all this talk of money and unions and titles, like, it just puts it into perspective. Like, as a fighter like Cody Stamann, one of the biggest wins of his career, and he just goes, you know what, it's not important right now, I gotta go to a funeral. And that was like, I was like, man, like, what matters in this world outside of family? And he lost that. And then for the third slot, it's, I'm going to group these together because if not for their performances, but Devin Clark and Oscar Serres, two African-American fighters using their platform that they have to push a movement that they are behind. Of course, Devin Clark, we didn't get to talk to him after because his eye blew up. I'm pretty sure he broke his orbital during the introductions, gets down on one knee and raised his fist to support the Black Lives Matter movement. And then, of course, Oscar Serres walking out to This Is America. And he was so transparent all week for the racism that he's felt throughout his life. And he even had a quote where it was like, we can't start begging people that are coming into our neighborhood and beating us over the heads to change. We have to be the ones to change. I have to be a voice. So I'm not putting those two together in terms of their performances because both of their performances are drastically different. But the fact that they use their platform to push to talk about a movement that is really captivating the world outside of fighting, those two. So those three performances really, really stick out in my mind outside of the obvious ones that Damon mentioned.
And let me, if I could real quick, let me just throw in there, and a phenomenal point, Jose, I want to throw in. Let's also mention Aljamain Sterling, who mentioned that, you know, he talked about it. I asked him that question on the media day, and he talked about, you know, using his platform for that and using his platform to speak out, and felt like it was important for him to, you know, take that opportunity to speak about Black Lives Matter and police brutality and things like that. So I want to give a shout out to Aljamain because he did as well. He didn't afterwards, obviously, you know, I'm not going to fault him for that, but I think it was important. Well, he did actually.
I asked him straight up, like, will you be at the protest? He goes, yup. And he's like, and then he went really into it. And then he made some excellent points. Even Alex Caceres, we asked Sterling and Caceres, like, does the UFC do a good job promoting minorities? Like, just straight up. And they both gave a little, they didn't really answer it straight up, but they just kind of like, Alex Caceres is like, that is a whole nother conversation. I know. He's like, I know who they want to push when I see them. And I know who I am. And even Alex Caceres, I mean, Aljamain Sterling goes, I don't really look at it as black versus white. But, like, you kind of tell there was something back there because he kind of brought it up in the past with the one he was like, why is Sage Northcutt making more money than me? I think and even, like, Devin Clark was on, like, the front page of, like, CNN and Yahoo just for the fact that he kneeled. So when's the last time Major Alice talks about Devin Clark outside of MMA, the circle? Like, never. And I say that because Devin Clark is a great fighter and he put on a good performance, a gritty performance, but we're talking about him using his platform, not his actual fight. So shout out to all those guys using their platform the right way.
I'm not even standing. I'm just telling you, Mike, give him the point, because that was a great point, because I can't even – that when you look at the bigger picture outside of fighting, that is the bigger picture, and it really is. And what those guys did, you're absolutely 100%, man, that was huge. What Aljamain did speaking out was huge. You know, it's so nice to have this distraction for fighting. I love it. You know, it was nice to kind of wander away from everything going on in the world for a few hours. But, you know, as somebody who, you know, who's watched this unfold and seen, I actually just drove into downtown Columbus over the weekend and saw, you know, everything going on down there. And, man, I'm just, you know, I'm proud people are standing up, and I was happy to see those guys do it. It's bigger than the sport. And I applaud them for doing what they did.
And you can tell a lot of them are relieved to finally be able to talk about it, because I was going through a lot of their social medias, and almost all of them were not talking about it before the fight because they were in camp. But as soon as camp's over, they know what's important, and that's exactly where their mind goes. So it was interesting to see, like, the relief in their face that they can finally express what they want now that they're not in camp.
Sure, I agree. Well said, Jose. You are going to get the point. And a shout out to Devin Clark's dad, who was the best corner.
I knew you were going to bring that up. I was waiting for that one.
he would make my top three stars list, no doubt about it, just for his corner work and how motivating he is. But I agree. I mean, obviously, performance-wise, I agree with Damon. The bantamweight shine. I actually have I would have Cody Garbrandt as my number one. Not taking anything away from Sterling, because that was an incredible win, or O'Malley's knockout, because that was impressive as well. But, you know, what Cody did to bounce back against a really hard guy to bounce back against, the way he approached the fight, he still got some hurdles. You know, he got it, especially in that second round. The dog almost came out of him, but he was able to kind of keep it together. The Garbrandt 2.0 story has become one of the more fascinating stories to watch, in my opinion, to see if he can keep this train moving forward. But again, lots of great performances, lots of great messages sent throughout the night. So well said, Jose. You get the point. As we head to our final question of regulation, we look ahead to UFC Fight Night, I versus Calvillo. And what is it? UFC on ESPN 10? Is that what we're going with here?
Something like that.
So regardless, Jessica Eye versus Cynthia Calvillo is the main event. And listen, I am well aware that this is not the flashiest main event of all time. And a lot of people have their reasoning for disagreeing with it, and that's totally fine. But I don't think this card from top to bottom is that bad. Like, we were talking about it off air a little bit. Also, let's keep in mind that UFC 250 was not looked at in a very positive light for a long time, and it turned out to be a great card. So I like to go in positively thinking about all these cards, but it leads me to the question, Jose Youngs. Dana White has said this many times. We're in the middle of a pandemic. The UFC is trying to put fights on. It's crazy. It's effing bananas. If you try to walk in my shoes, you wouldn't know what to do with it. With that in mind and everything else going on in the world and what Dana says, is the criticism of the UFC and this fight card and other fight cards like 250, is it fair? Are people being too hard on them, or is this completely justified in your opinion?
Well, I don't know what's fair and what's not fair, because people can have their own opinions however they want, because, like, as much as people decry the main event between I and Calvillo, like, they had like there's, you know, like there's people out there that are massive Jess Guy fans or massive Cynthia Calvillo fans. So for them, they're probably, they're loving this. I mean, who was Callan Chukagian, who's in this weight class, who out of all of us, like we're just journalists and fans there, an actual fighter in this weight class who is just fought a number one contender or just fought for the title and is still technically like the highest ranked female is like, I love it. It brings eyes to the weight class. So it's not in terms of like they both coming off a missed weight. Cynthia Calvillo hasn't fought a flyweight in the UFC. Jess Guy didn't have the most stellar performance in her last fight, but a win is a win. Cynthia Calvillo is also coming off a draw. Let's not forget that. So I get it. People might be upset, but I know there's people out there that want to watch the fight. And what do you want these two women to do? Say no? Just be like, no, I don't want to headline a card. Like, that's ridiculous. Like in the grand scheme of things, I would have liked seeing Sterling and Sandhagen in that main event. But they just showed like they don't need five rounds, and I think Sterling winning on a massive card like UFC 250 actually is more beneficial for him than headlining a card that not as many people are going to watch. So I don't know. I don't really care that it's the main event. It doesn't bother me. I get people will be bothered, but if fighters don't care, then I don't really see why I should be upset.
Damon, what do you think?
Well, I mean, in terms of tension and excitement, is there going to be as much, excitement? No, I think this complaint right after the main event got announced.
Sorry, this is the truck.
The opening, first.
Damon, cut up. Damon, you have to crawl out of that tin can you're in. This is the truck speaking. Are you inside a microwave right now? What, Damon Martin?
Do we lose him?
Can you hear now?
Okay. Try again.
I can't hear him at all.
Can you talk, Damon?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Okay. There we go. All right. Sorry, Mike. Set him up one more time.
All right, Damon, defend your answer.
Well, I mean, listen, is Jess Guy versus Cynthia Calvillo the most exciting main event in the history of the sport? Absolutely not. It's not. But here's the thing. You know, these divisions, these lesser talked about divisions, are never going to get a chance to shine if these fights don't get marquee spots like this. I mean, I remember when I think it was Caitlin Chukagian was fighting JoJo Calderwood, and they were the opening fight of the early prelims. And I think that's the fight that got Caitlin the title shot. And then she goes on and fights Valentina Shevchenko, who is the one, you know, quote unquote marketable fighter in this division, because obviously Valentina Shevchenko is a complete badass. But I just don't know how you're ever going to get a chance for these divisions to shine if you never give them a chance to have these kind of moments. I mean, I know the ratings aren't probably going to be great on this card. And I know the attention being paid isn't going to be anywhere near UFC 250 or, you know, Dustin Poirier and Dan Hooker or, you know, whatever fights are coming up in July. But, you know, it's the fight card. And there are other interesting fights on here. I mean, I'm actually really looking forward to the Marvin Vettori, Carl Roberson fight after the rivalry those two have built after the last fight got scrapped. So, you know, listen, we kind of get spoiled a little bit in MMA where we have these great cards in the UFC where we always expect a big main event or a marquee main event. But the reality is, you know, you remember the old UFC on fuel cards or UFC on versus cards or look at a lot of Bellator cards out there. They're not always these cards where it's over and you're just like, man, we just found out a new number one contender. Oh, man, we just found, you know, the next great star or whatever. Listen, this isn't the greatest main event in the world, but that doesn't mean it can't be enjoyable. It doesn't mean we won't see some fun fights, and it won't mean that, you know, maybe Cynthia Calvillo comes out and gets a win and right away we actually have a new challenger for Valentina Shevchenko, or, you know, Jess Guy goes out there and beats another top-ranked fighter and continues her climb back to Valentina Shevchenko. This division, the flyweight division, is never going to get a chance to get people interested outside of Valentina if they don't have fights like this where they are getting a headline or a co-headline spot.
So, Damon, hold on.
I would like to add Callan Chukagian beat Jennifer Maia after Calderwood to get the title shot.
There you go.
Well, but that was the opening fight. That was the opening fight of the early prelims, right? Like, that was the opening
the
fight.
The Calderwood Chukagian, yeah, that was 238. That was real early. And then she got offered the fight against Valentina, turned it down to get married. Valentina fought Carmouche instead. Callan Chukagian fought Jennifer Ai and then fought then basically reclaimed her number one contender spot.
Yeah. Jennifer Maia. Yeah, but those fights are, like I said, those fights were buried. And that's the other thing. People always complain when they're buried. They're like, I can't believe, like, what was it last week? Tim Elliott. Wasn't he on the prelims last week? And everyone's like, I can't believe they're on Alex the prelims. Perez. And Perez like, I'm on the, how is this happening? I can't believe this is on the prelim. But then when they you get a marquee spot, why is this the main event? Oh, my God, this is terrible.
I agree with that. Damon, what are you grading this card as a whole? If you could put a letter grade on it as it looks on paper right now, what are you grading it?
Oh, man. Why are you dooming me like this?
I'm making you defend your answer here.
I mean, am I lying and saying it's better than a C-minus card on paper? Probably not. And that's not a knock on the main event necessarily as much as it's just there's not a lot of name value beyond a couple of fights on this card, and that hurts it. But again, and I don't want to sound like the Dana White promoter, but you know, sometimes you judge a card by the aftermath, and there are some potentially fun fights on here. They're just not name value. And so that immediately makes it like a C minus or a D card on paper. But you know, here's a chance for Calvillo and I and all these other, you know, Vittori and Roberson. There's a chance for them to shine and prove us all wrong.
Exactly. Jose, what's your grade?
C minus seems fine. It's like, again, like for all we know, this could just be a bunch of knockouts. And we're like, wow, that was the craziest fight card I've ever seen. But like, so just off name value, I think what? Who's the most famous fighter on this card? Andre Feely? Probably, just because he's in a movie. He has that title, Uriah Faber. And then I fought, like, Andre Feely's probably the most famous fighter on this card. C minus. But again, like, who cares if there's big names on it? It's how, like, what? UFC 169, I was at. That had a bunch of big fights on that card, and that was, like, what, 10 of 12 were boring decisions? So it doesn't matter what names are. It's, I want to see how the fights play out first. Because
yeah, what about, what is it? Insanity. We had UFC, the UFC card that was titled UFC Knockout with everyone on there. Like There wasn't one knockout on the entire card. So you can't predict how things are going to play. Name value doesn't always produce winning fights. We got to be honest and about that.
Let's also, like, we can all probably agree that if there were still fans allowed and there wasn't a pandemic, I can't imagine Jessica Isitin Calvillo would be headlining a card in like Portland, Oregon, if the fans are going to be in there. This is a UFC Apex card that you can tune in if you want. You don't even have to pay for it. Just watch it if you want. Don't watch it if you don't want. Like at the end, like you're buying a ticket to it anyway.
Yeah, and that's the other thing about the complaints. You know, you're not required to watch every fight card. I mean, we do. We obviously, as journalists, we watch every fight card. I mean, I've watched a lot of bad fight cards over the years, and a lot of bad fight cards. And I'm not going to name names which promotions they came from, but I've watched a lot of bad fight cards over the years. So you're not obligated. No one's telling you you're forced. And they're not asking you to pay $59.99 or $65 or whatever for this card. I mean, yeah, if you have cable, technically you're paying for ESPN, or if you pay $5 a month for, you know, yeah, I've been paying $7 a month for Disney Plus for the last, whatever, like 9 months, and I had the only thing I've watched on there is The Mandalorian, and that ended like, you know, 6-7 months ago. So I'm still paying for Disney Plus, and I'm getting nothing out of it right now.
You mean you're not watching Gargoyles like any other true-blooded American?
I am not. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm paying for Disney Plus, and I haven't logged into that thing. I love Disney Plus. If I want to watch a Star Wars movie, I'll go there. But yeah, I'm paying for that, and I haven't watched anything since The Mandalorian ended.
Well, the point goes to Damon because he wasted all this money on Disney Plus without watching anything. But we're tied after four rounds. It's 2-2, and that means we're going to head to the – what are we going to call it? We'll call it the knockout round. It's MMA after all. One question, one argument decides the winner. The truck will have the final decision to take the weight off of me because I don't want it. But here it is. Jose, you are the champion. With that comes some spoils. Are you kicking off or receiving?
Oh, kicking off. I'm from New England.
There you go. Damon, here's the question, because I heard in your voice how excited you are for this card on Saturday night, because there are some pretty good matchups on here. So the question I have for you, and it's hard to predict the future, what's the fight of the night on UFC Vegas, baby Vegas?
That is an interesting question. You know, honestly, the one I'm really looking forward to, just because of the bad blood – at the end of the day is I'm really looking forward to Marvin Vettori and Carl Roberson. Now, again, two guys who dislike each other, and there's a lot of bad blood there, especially after what happened when their last fight got canceled. Doesn't always, again, produce a great fight. There could be a lot of posturing in a fight like that because, you know, neither guy wants to give an inch. But Marvin Vettori is a very underrated middleweight, and he's a very fun guy to watch. And I think Carl Roberson is one of those guys who has that big knockout ability, has shown some ground talent as well. So, I mean, just based on that, I'm going to have to go with that as my fight of the night, the one I'm probably looking most forward to. So I would put that at the top of the list. But I'm also looking forward to seeing, you know, Kevin Aguilar's back on this card. Obviously, you mentioned Andre Feely's on this card. That's a fun fight. Jordan Espinosa, Mark De La Rosa is a fun fight. But if I got to pick one, I'm going with the bad blood between Vettori and Roberson.
Jose, what is your fight of the night for UFC on ESPN 10? Yes.
For fight of the night?
What's your fight of the night?
I mean, money would probably be Andre Feely because I can't even remember a bad fight he's in. Like, even fights that, like, he pulls off decisions there, at least they're fun fights to watch. I mean, even the fight against Miles Jury might not have, like, people doesn't stick out of my, in your mind, but, like, I remember, like, I look at the photos of Esther Lynn, and, like, everyone is, like, just, like, people throwing and then, like, a trail of blood, like in the air following their fists or even it's, like, I think a super underrated fight that happened that not enough people talk about was Feely's fight against Max Holloway. I think UFC 172. I love that fight. Andre Feely said last year that he wanted to be champion, and then he lost, and now he's on, and then we had him on the A side promoting his movie, and he's like, has a whole new lease on life. He wants to get back in there immediately, especially the 145. So the champion can't fight. It's similar to what Paul Felder, I think. Was it you that he said that to, where he's like, American based fighters can really, like, skip the line maybe because they can fight more often with the champion, being in Australia, these featherweight fights seem more important than ever before. So if I'm looking at a fight, if I'm going to put money on it, it'll be Andre Feely because he's never in a really boring fight. Espinosa De La Rosa is fun if you like grappling because, like, they both have what, like, most of their by submission. Selfishly, I love watching Hannah Cypher's fights just because I always want to interview her because she's just the best interviewer in the world, even though she says like five words total. So I'll say my money's going to have to be on Feely simply because I can't remember a fight where the post-fight photos aren't either bloody or him like jumping into the crowd at sheer jubilation. So I'll say the Andre Feely fight.
And I'll throw in one more sleeper to keep an eye on the prelims: Ryan Benoit and Tyson Yan. That's a really fun fight too.
I mean, there's the Merab Ray Borg fight is like, that's a good fight, but I think Merab's just going to toss him around. Like, I don't think that's going to be a back and forth war. So there are going to be a lot of good performances. But if we're talking about just like a good fight, the Feely Charles Jourdain fight, and then like I like Julia Vila, like I'm really interested in that fight, and the Charles Rosa fight, I'm really interested in that fight. But I don't think they're going to be fight of the nights. I think they're going to be good performances. So the Feely fight is the one, and then like Robertson Vettori, I think someone's just going to go to bed in like the first round. Someone's turning into a human floor mat. So I don't know if that's going to be a good fight as much as someone's dying in that fight real quick.
See, we're selling the card for you. How about that?
We got to go to the main event.
Yeah, none of them. Feely Jourdain's a great fight. I love the Rosa Aguilar fight, though. That's a good one. Even a couple of newcomers with nothing to lose, really, with Anthony Ivey and Christian Aguilera. That should be a lot of fun. Ivey's really, a finisher, man.
I'm excited for the Christian. I've watched Christian Aguilera's fights live on like the LFA scene so much, and because he fights in the Arizona cards a lot, and it's always like, if I win this fight, I'm going to the UFC, and then he always comes up just short. So like those fights, like the Aguilar fight and the Mirab fight and everything, they're gonna like, they're even the Julia Vila fight, like they're gonna be good fights. They're not gonna be wars. I think it's gonna be like quick finishes or like grind them out wars to save people's jobs or pick up their first wins or even just pure domination. Or so I don't think if I'm looking at like a good fight, it's the Andre Feely.
Feely Jourdain's a good one. There's a lot of 100%. There's a lot of good fights on this card. Ivy Aguilera is an interesting one. And if I'm Murad Boalashvili, I'm making this fight competitive because I think he's gonna have a hard time finding guys to fight him because he's probably going to be in the top 15. But with that said, we got to go to the truck. We got to go to the voice behind the scenes. And if you could hear this voice as the show is being recorded, you would be dying right now. But he is the man of the people, and he is the man with the second best mustache in MMA media, Mr. Casey Lyde and Mr. Truck. Sir, who gets the final point in the title?
Well, today's winner is... because there were less technical difficulties with him, and I've now pulled my hair out, and my scalp looks just like you, Mike Heck. Our winner today is Mr. Jose Youngs.
Wow, and still the Between the Links champion. If you guys even realized how long this episode has taken to put
I
together.
I hope people that watch this know how much effort we put into this.
We're approaching hour number three right now, people.
I should be more upset that I just lost, but in a way I'm just like, let him have it.
if Damon could get the 20 seconds like out at this point.
You've been in this grueling grind them out fight for 4.5 rounds. And you're just like, I'm tired. Just choke me out.
but honestly, he started talking when we came back, and like he almost started breaking up again. I was like, you cannot do this to me right now. You cannot do this to me. But with that, Jose, before this whole system crashes, 30 seconds to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, good, bad, and different in the world of MMA. The floor is yours.
Man, I'm going to reiterate what I said when we were talking about Stars of the Night. I am just so happy to see people using their platform. Everyone wants more money, and all this union talk and fighters coming together. But the fact of the matter is what's going on in the world right now is so much more important. And yes, the UFC is the only sport in town right now, and they do give us some sort of distraction. But fighters like Devin Clark, Alex Serres, and Aljamain Sterling using what the platform they have to push a movement that they are not only behind, but are living day to day. Like, kudos to you guys for understanding that there are bigger things going on in the world. And that is truly what matters right now. So I'll say that. Normally, I like to throw a lot of shade at the people that have lost and call people out and this and that. But Damon has gone through enough grief right now with his technical issues. And like I said, there are more important things going on in the world. So I don't have a call out, because I don't know who else can even give me a challenge. So you find the opponent, and they can go 0-1 on this iteration of Between the Links.
Wow, it's like John Cena as the U.S. champion. Open call out. Who wants it? I love it. Well done. Well said, Jose. Congratulations to you. Valiant effort. Great performance from Damon Martin, and we're done. The matchups are going to continue. There's a lot of members of the MMA media, I will say, Jose, that want in on this, and not just from MMA fighting, but beyond MMA fighting. And we're going to try to get a bunch of names and different faces on this program. But big thank you to Casey Lyden in the truck. Don't pull out all of that hair and keep the mustache right where it is. Big thank you to Esther Lynn behind the scenes. She's kind of the calming voice as all of this craziness is going down. But for Jose Youngs and Damon Martin, I am Mike Heck. Thank you all for watching and listening. We'll see you back here next week on Between the Links. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.